This is Weekend Edition on WNYC. Good morning, I'm David First. Now that Mayor de Blasio has secured a second term and New Jersey has picked a new governor, it's naturally time to immediately dive into the 2018 campaign. There's going to be a lot of focus on congressional races in our area as Democrats try to retake the House, and Governor Cuomo is up for re-election with the prospect of a run for the White House in 2020 shadowing him on the campaign trail and in the State House. Joining us on This Week in Politics for an early preview are, by Skype from the nation's capital, WNYC's Washington correspondent John O'Connor, and here in our New York studio, State House reporter Fred Mogul. Welcome.
Hi there.
Hi.
Fred, let's start with the governor. What is going to define this campaign?
Well, he's going to be running for a third term. Unlike New Jersey, New York doesn't have term limits. So he'll be campaigning on his track record over the last 8 years, what he has and hasn't accomplished in terms of lowering taxes, growing the economy, shrinking expenses, especially Medicaid, changing laws, and reforming Albany. He'll also be running, not surprisingly, against Donald Trump, against Trump's politics and his policies. Cuomo's given notice he's going to be campaigning hard against all or most of the state's 9 Republican congressmen and women, particularly those who toe the White House's line on the tax overhaul and the repeal and replace movement on the Federal Health Care Act.
Speaking of the White House, Cuomo has long been thought to have his eyes on it. Is he going to go for it in 2020? And how might that affect his campaign in 2018?
You know, David, it's not too much of an exaggeration to say just about every governor of New York, particularly with 2 terms under their belt, feels destined for the highest office in the land. Cuomo, not the most subtle poker player in the world. He can hardly give a speech without mentioning New York's most recent governors turned presidents, Teddy Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt, not exactly just the other day, but he's always linking their successes in Albany with their success in Washington. How will his presidential aspirations affect next year's gubernatorial bid? You know, tough to say. His opponents and reporters like me will constantly be bringing it up. He'll be asked whether he'll take a pledge to serve out his term limit if he's reelected. He'll keep deflecting. Presumably, though, he'll want to win as decisively as possible, show he's got crossover appeal to centrist Democrats and Republicans, not just support among progressives. You know, maybe that'll affect where he travels around the state, which politicians and policies and local projects he supports.
Well, that game plan of trying to win as decisively as possible before possibly a presidential run, that sounds a lot like what we just saw in New Jersey with Chris Christie.
It didn't go so well, as we all know, for Chris Christie. They say generals fight the last war. Presumably, Cuomo will maybe have learned a few lessons from that. You know, in terms of the pressure he brings to bear on local mayors, I don't think he'll find, that it's time for some traffic problems in Rochester. he plays his own game, and we'll see how it plays out.
All right. What about opponents? Republican Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino just lost his bid for reelection. He ran against Cuomo in the last governor's race, and it looked like he was going to challenge him again. So who is lining up to run against Cuomo this time?
Well, first is the primaries, and there's certainly been some saber-rattling on Governor Cuomo's left flank, just as there was in 2014. Lots of progressives feel he's way too cozy with Republicans, so there's a decent chance he will, in fact, face a primary challenge. Stephanie Miner, the liberal mayor of Syracuse, has hinted at it. Terry Gibson, a former Hudson Valley state senator. Even actress Cynthia Nixon says people are asking her to run against Cuomo. Looking ahead past that to the general election, no Republicans have actually stepped forward yet decisively saying they're going to take on Cuomo. They say he's vulnerable. They say his administration is dogged with ethical problems. There's going to be not one but 2 big corruption trials next year in January and May that are going to be overshadowing his administration over his gubernatorial bid. There's this Syracuse area senator named John DeFrancisco. He's been testing the waters a bit. I just should also add that whether we're talking about the primaries or the general election, Governor Cuomo does have a $25 million campaign war chest to take on all comers, so they'll have to really, really want it.
Okay, let's go to the congressional races and John O'Connor in Washington. John, how important are New York and New Jersey when it comes to who controls the House?
Well, depending on vacancies between now and then, Democrats have to win about 24 seats to flip control of the House, and they can't close that gap without wins in California, fast-growing Sunbelt suburbs, and New York and New Jersey. There's 14 seats controlled by Republicans in New York and New Jersey, and most would be vulnerable in a wave year. New York and New Jersey are unique because of the way that they do redistricting. New York, they were set by the courts. So there's lots of swing districts, lots of districts that are competitive, which is unusual across the country.
Well, in South Jersey, Republican Frank Lobiondo announced this week that he's going to be retiring after 12 terms. What does that mean for that district and the battle to control the House in 2018?
Lobiondo was considered a pretty safe incumbent otherwise. It was not a seat that Democrats thought that they had a great shot at. It's kind of on their wish list of seats that they could win, but not something that they would have expected to win. Now it's a toss-up seat with no incumbent. Republican retirements this year are running well ahead of where they were in 2008 and 2010, which were the last Democratic waves. The press gallery here in the Senate keeps what they call a casualty list. And 30 Republicans so far have already announced that they're not seeking re-election next year. Half of those are running for other jobs, or they took a job with the Trump administration. So half of those seats are seats that they're actually leaving, and they're going to be open seats. And many of those are going to be open seats in swing districts that Democrats think they're going to have a great shot at.
Okay, so let's take a quick look at the election that just finished. What do the election results in Virginia and New Jersey mean for congressional races in 2018?
Well, one of the big questions was whether this energy we're seeing from progressive activists and others was real and could be translated into election results. Virginia and New Jersey show that the answer is clearly yes. And now, after a string of special election losses earlier this year, Democrats have something to hold on to and to motivate them here over the next year. One of the lessons folks in Virginia have been saying this week is to compete everywhere, that you need to have candidates who run. That's something I've heard in Rodney Frelinghuysen's central New Jersey district, for instance, that everyone there kind of assumed that the Republican was always going to win, so they never really challenged him. Well, they're challenging him now in 2018. What we also saw was that the limited success of running a Trump-like campaign means that you may have to talk about other things in 2018, other accomplishments. And for Republicans in Congress, right now that means talking about a health care bill repeal that they couldn't get done and this tax bill that they're working on. Both of those issues have not shown very well in polls. So these could be things that voters aren't real receptive to.
WNYC's Washington correspondent John O'Connor and Albany reporter Fred Mogul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, David.